Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it.
Welcome to Friday's episode of the podcast. And this is one that I am particularly excited about. I am flying solo today, but I don't think it's going to matter because we have known this guest for a really long time. I'm trying to think, we've probably met Emma, giving her name away already. 4 years ago, maybe, I want to say. And she has helped both of us personally with our careers. And so we thought, new year, lots of you guys are setting goals. Why not get somebody on who can help us with our career goals? So welcome to the podcast, Emma Kangas, who is a leadership, career and mindset coach. Emma, do you want to just tell us a little bit about what you do first off?
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited about this. Yeah, so I work with both men and women, working on their careers. Now, that could be that they want to sort of maximise confidence. It could be that they want to have a greater impact on their job. That could be in a corporate. They could be running their own business. They could be going through some kind of transition in terms of a job promotion, going to another company. They might want to set up their own business, or they might be on some kind of career break, such as maternity leave, or they may have had some time off because they've been with children, and the children have gone to school. So essentially, it's some kind of transition, but what they all have in common is that they want to kind of maximise their own potential. Often, you know, the confidence elements comes in always. And as well as a big part of that is really using network and relationships and being much better at relationships and with, you know, colleagues, etc. at work. But I guess it's maximising the impact and influence that people can have at work.
Okay, amazing. And you've obviously got two children yourself, so you've been through these transitions.
Yes.
Coming off maternity leave, starting your own business, all of that kind of stuff. Mm. You actually helped me when I was working for somebody else in a corporate environment and I wanted to go freelance and my head was in a complete pickle. I was a complete mess and I'm never usually like that. And I think we just did a couple of sessions, didn't we? And and I did it. And it's all going really well. So yeah, sometimes it's the confidence that you need to talk to somebody else and sort of get all your worries off and sort of put a plan in place. Because those sort of practical steps to developing your career and your confidence really actually do go hand in hand. So anyway, we've actually had loads of questions. So I think we should probably just get straight in.
Yeah.
Just a little flag. I have got a small child downstairs. So if anybody hears Gigi making an entrance. First question, how to survive January? There is a huge pressure to set goals and start achieving them.
I think the thing is that when people think of a goal, they tend to think of a big goal. Mm. And then as soon as you think of a big goal, the pressure's on. You know, you will most likely feel slightly stressed about it and then start thinking, how am I going to achieve this big goal? And it's January. And can I achieve it in the next 3 months, in the next 6 months, in the next year? And more often than not, it's because we've labelled it as a big goal.
Yeah.
So what I would suggest is I would underline if you actually want to make goals in January, try and break them down. don't necessarily go for the big goal. Try and think of the kind of baby steps that you need to take in order to get to that goal. And if you look at it as, you know, the goal is kind of quite a way down a path, and you're just going to walk that path rather than the goal is right in front of you and you need to achieve it now. Mm-hmm. So think about those steps. The thing is, if you haven't got a goal, it really doesn't matter. You know, one of the questions that came up before was that, you know, what if I don't have a goal? You know, is that okay? Because obviously people around you are saying, oh, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You don't have to have a goal.
No, I
would say that most people, they may not even know it, but they probably do have some form of goal, even if it is, you know, you're running your own business, you need to do your tax return by the end of January. That's still, it's a goal, it's an achievement. And maybe one way to look at it is, instead of looking at it as a goal, you look at it as what you want to achieve over the next month, over the next 6 months. The word achieve is a lot lighter and it's a lot brighter than using the word goal. The other thing is, and George and I were sort of talking about this earlier, is that my new year tends to start in September, which is the beginning of my children's school term. So I tend to sort of look at my year from September onwards. Now, no, I don't really meet many people doing the same thing. So actually, I don't hear a lot of stuff about it, which is like added pressure to get things done. And, you know, there are other people who look at the new year in January as time to sort of set goals. So it might be that you might just want to change when you set those goals,
yeah,
whether
that's
or not
what I was
it's
gonna
January.
Say. It could be February.
Yeah,
you
could
give
be
yourself
any.
January to ease in and then set them in Feb. I actually heard on Stephen Bartlett's podcast, Diary of a CEO, he was talking about sort of New Year's resolutions and like the science behind it, and how I think it's something like 80% of people don't keep them up. And if you've sort of stuck to it 6 months in, then you are basically going to stick to it. And he looked into it and he said, you're so, like you say, it's so much better to just do a few small achievable goals and then revisit them come March, you know, change the goalposts, than it is to do one huge big thing that just feels so out of reach and so, you know, overwhelming that you're just going to basically just give up and just not do it. There's another question. This is about career changing. And actually, I think January can be quite a reflective time, can't it? Because lots of us slow down over Christmas and think about our lives and what can we do different? So what is the best way to go about a career change? I'm feeling like I need a change in career. How do I decide, you know, what to pivot into?
I think if we start with what is it? I mean, you may have had a previous career. You may have, you know, sort of stopped work for the last 3-4 years. But try and have a think about what is it about your current career or your previous career that you particularly enjoyed? Normally, the things that we enjoy are the things that we're good at. So I would focus on the next step being your strengths, what your strengths are, what your superpowers are. And sometimes it's quite difficult to answer that question yourself. You sort of feel like a little bit like, oh, I can't say that. You know, I can't say that about me. That's, you know, being a bit boastful. If you feel like that, ask somebody else, either a friend, either a colleague, to sort of say to you, actually, from what I see, your strengths are. And really think about what those are. And once you've sort of got your list of, you know, what you enjoy, what you find fulfilling about work. Again, if we find our work fulfilling, the happier we're going to be. And ultimately, there's not a lot of point changing career or pivoting unless it's going to be something that you're going to enjoy. And normally people that want to pivot, it does mean that either they don't enjoy what they're doing, or they might be a bit bored, they may have been doing it for years, and their situation may have changed, therefore they want to work different hours. So sort of have a think about what would be the ideal? And I often say to my clients, let's start with the perfect scenario, because we can always work backwards from the perfect scenario. I had a client once, a teacher, and she'd taken a career break. She had 2 children. And she was saying how there was no way that the school would enable her to work 2 days a week. And I said, well, how much truth is there in that? And she said, well, I don't know, but it's just not what I think that they would do. And I said, but is that your perfect scenario? She said, absolutely. If I could work 2 days a week in the school, school hours, brilliant. I said, well, let's see. Let's see if you, that's a conversation that you can have. Oh, no, I can't possibly have that conversation. So we worked on what that conversation could look like. So anyway, after some time together, she then had the conversation and she now works 2 days a week in that school. So it is, you know, I think some people say, well, there's no point in me starting off with the perfect because the perfect can never happen. Mm. But if you start with that, you can really understand what your vision is, where your strengths come in and the value that you can add and the value that you want to get out of it. So it's sort of, if you think of a bit of a spider diagram or a bit of a mind map, you know, if you start with ultimately what is it that you want to do and then work from that,
yeah,
and then your strengths, your superpowers, your goals, your vision, your purpose, it all links in to then trying to figure out the much bigger picture, which is what sort of career you would want to do or what role would you want to do. You might see somebody and you think, I'd love to do that. Well, think about, well why not? Why wouldn't you be able to do that? At least start with that and then look at what's realistic financially and what you're capable of.
Yeah. I think as well, it can be so hard to see your transferable skills. So like my husband, as you know, used to play football and he now has a job in finance, which are like miles apart. And he still even now actually can't see what he does, like what his skills are and how, what you know, the skills that came over from that one job into a different job, you know, like all the team playing and man management and all of those working under pressure, all of those things. And actually I think sometimes people are so much more open to fresh eyes in a business now than they, you know, you don't have to have done the typical route to have a new career because people want a different perspective. You know, you might add a different perspective or someone who hasn't been bogged down, you know, for years and years and years, and you're coming in fresh, but also with life experience. I think there is, you know, it seems so daunting to change career, but actually when you look at the job that you would be doing day to day, how much of it could you probably just do already? Loads of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the one thing that a lot of people forget is sidestepping. So when they think about a career change, they either think about leaving and working in a different company or a different industry, or they might be thinking, actually, I want to kind of aim for that promotion, aim for that step up. But people forget about sidestepping. So it's much more common now. I mean, I remember when I was working within corporates, the idea of moving department wasn't really a thing, and we are talking a long time ago. But now businesses are really open to looking at somebody's skill set and moving them within the business. So you might be in marketing one day, but actually you're interested in HR. And I think it's really looking, as you say, what are those transferable skills and what other areas am I interested in? Because, you know, there is no reason why you can't then try and look, at least look and make inquiries into that particular department or that particular business that you want to work in. So sidestepping can be a really valuable thing to do. And some people even, it's beneficial for them to take, I'll say a step down, but, you know, it often doesn't have to be that way. In order to then go on to something that they really want to do. So there's a bit of strategy that's worth considering. I always say to people, get quite specific. Once you've done sort of this sort of bit of a brainstorm mind map, look at something that you can, is attainable when you look at your situation. And then relevant for what you want to be doing. And then you can start looking at the time factor of when you start talking to people and when could you start your pivot, just so that it does become a bit more, you know, strategizing rather than just putting it out there and seeing what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is a niche one, actually. How do I start journaling? Also, can you just let us know what journaling is? Because I don't really know what that is.
So I often describe journaling as a brainstorm. It's kind of, you know, I often say to my clients, you know, I'm your thinking partner. And so let journaling as well be your thinking partner. Because if you literally just find a nice sort of notebook, you know, most people do quite like a nice looking notebook. Find one that
love
you
the
will...
papier notebooks.
Exactly. And actually, with the papier ones, you can personalise the titles. So you can have something on there that really lights you up and, you know, makes you smile. And the idea is literally just to initially write whatever comes to mind. And that blows people's mind away sometimes because they're like, yeah, but I could be writing anything. And that is the point. If you want some kind of structure... I've been journaling now for about 3 years, and I always start every evening before going to bed, three things that I'm grateful for. The reason why I do that is because it really makes me smile. And actually, it makes me think of all the really great things that have happened that day. Sometimes that list is, you know, way longer than three things, but it's something to start off with. And then I tend to just write the word that enters my head, and it might be a way that I'm feeling. So I might write the word excited. And then I elaborate on that because then I start to think, what am I excited about? And then I start writing what I'm excited about. Or it might be that you're thinking about something you need to do at work tomorrow. Write it down. It doesn't mean that your journaling is going to be all about that one thing, but what might come out of it is how you're feeling about that one thing. It just means it's a brain dump. It just gets everything that's in here onto paper. And the more you get used to doing it, you might get a bit uncomfortable. You might sort of look at the page and laugh because it doesn't make sense. That's fine. Because the more you get used to it, the more it then starts to make sense. Beauty of journaling is if I go back, say, 3 years, and I look at what was I journaling, you know, on the 5th of January, it's so interesting to see, you know, was there anything I was worried about that I probably didn't need to be worried about? Mm-hmm. Was there a work project that I really wanted to kind of kick off? And then I can look at it and go, that happened. You know, so it's a really nice thing to go back to. But essentially, it is a brain dump and it just gets ideas and thoughts out there to clear the mind, which is always a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, maybe I'll start doing that then. I think this is one that so many of us can relate to. How can you juggle work and kids? I think a lot of us feel guilty, you know, if we're leaving for work, or guilty when we're not around for the kids, not there for pickups. How do you go about juggling it all?
First of all, the guilt is incredibly common. I would get curious about that guilt. Why is it that you feel guilty? And should you be feeling guilty? Can you find truth in that, in what you're feeling guilty about? And actually, what you're feeling guilty about, what effect does that have in terms of, you know, you might be thinking, you know, for example, my daughter said to me the other day, could she have a play date with a friend? And I was thinking, oh, but you know, I would have worked quite a bit that week, and you know, it'd be nice to see you after school. And you know, my sort of guilt starts kicking in. But then I think, well, however much my daughter loves me, I think she'd rather have a play date with one of her mates. And so what? And it's something that I read and heard recently, was that we have to start thinking about what is our need and what's our children's need, and sometimes our needs come from the guilt and what we ultimately need. We need to be, you know, I need to be with my daughter because it makes me feel better and less guilty. But actually, what's her need? Her need is actually to have a really fab time with her friends playing, you know, teachers and the things that they play. So really think about, actually, do I need to feel guilty about this? Do I need to feel guilty about the fact that I'm working? You know, because actually what is best for my children and what it is they want to do. And you'll find that there'll be certain situations where you no longer feel guilty about, because they're ultimately having a good time. The other thing which always comes up when I'm coaching those that have that kind of guilt, and especially those that, you know, they're very much interested in their work, you know, their career, but also they love being a parent, is that the need to switch identity. What I would say is that, you know, there's a lot of conditioning at the moment about being one person, being authentic. So always bringing that one person into the workplace. I actually have quite a different take on this. I think it's absolutely fine to have a work identity and a home identity. You're still the same person. You know, you've just acquired a different style, or you might speak differently, or you might act differently, but that's absolutely fine. You're still being you. And what I find is those that accept that they have different identities, when they go into work identity, because they're not carrying across so much of the mum identity, they don't feel as guilty, because they're very much in the mode that they need to be in for work. That's not a selfish act either. It's just a case of thinking, right, I need to be in this work mode. What do I need to be thinking? And if there is that element around guilt, okay, how can I change my mindset while I'm in my work mode to feel less guilty? And so there's a, you know, much bigger piece around that, but it's just really looking at, you know, the truth that's in the truth that's in the guilt. And in order to juggle being a mum and work, sometimes it is necessary to have different identities, purely just to manage that juggle. And that's absolutely fine. You can find your own way. You don't need to be this one person, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no. I think that's quite useful as well, to put different hats on. Oh, how do you redevelop confidence in the workplace after having a career break with kids? I'm sure you probably see this a lot when people have been off for long periods of time, maybe not just maternity leave, longer than that, and then they try to get back into the workplace.
Yeah. It's revisiting your strengths again. Just really thinking about, okay, where did my confidence lie before? What was I doing? What experiences did I have that made me feel confident? If you're re-entering the workplace, have a think about, what did I do that gave me confidence, that I enjoyed, that I would then want to do again? Because if you start with those things, your confidence will be built up again, because it's something familiar and it's something that you know that you're good at. So have a think about those experiences. Have a think about what your strengths are, what your USP is, so your unique selling point. Because some people say to me, I don't think I have one. I don't think I have a USP. But most people do. It's just a case of really thinking about it and having that confidence to say, yeah, actually, I'm a really good people person. You know, I love being with people. I'm really good at brand marketing because I can really understand a product and, you know, get my teeth into it and explain it. I'm really good at storytelling. So, you know, think about the things that you know that you're really, really good at. That automatically lifts our confidence anyway. The other thing is, if you are re-entering, say, the same company again, because you've had a year off mat leave, companies can change. So definitely think about the kit days. Use the kit days. A lot of people don't, and I never quite understand why, because, you know, A, you're paid for them, and B, they're so useful if you really use them properly. And then look at it as, if you're kind of re-entering, look at it as onboarding again. Now, for those that may not know the term onboarding, it's really a term that's part of transitioning back into a business or back into your career. So when we think about onboarding, we think about, okay, well, what does the culture look like? What do I need to know about the business, about the people? Who would my stakeholders be? Who would be part of my support group? So it's really looking at it with fresh eyes, that if you're going, you know, even if you are going back into somewhere you're familiar with, that business could have changed in that time, that industry could have changed. So lean upon people that you know can help you with, you know, with the knowledge and experience to inform you of what it is you need to know. The other thing I would always suggest, and it would fall under so many of the questions that you've been given, I'm sure, is that finding a mentor.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
I was also going to say, you know, like if you've had, say, I don't know, 10 years off work with your children and then you're going back into the workplace, how do you sort of, I don't know, like explain that long gap? Are you just honest and you just say, oh, you know, I took time off to be at home with my children, and then I guess come back to it with like, but in that time, I'm incredible at time management. I'm basically running, you know, like four different people's lives or whoever it is. How do you sort of suggest people go about that?
I think two things. Number one, own the situation. Own the last 10 years, because you would have done some incredible things in the last 10 years. The moment people own something, it's less questionable. If they are confident with how they're explaining, yes, in the last 10 years, I've had two children. This is what I've been doing. And really, you know, say it with, you know, confidence, and really step into that person that you are. Then whoever is, you know, interviewing you, for example, will have a lot more belief in you because of the fact that you're owning it. I think the other thing is that nowadays it's so accepting that people are taking breaks. You know, there are people that are requesting sabbaticals that are, you know, are being given those sabbaticals. So, you know, sabbatical isn't necessarily 10 years, but I think that it's more acceptable for you to be able to say, I've had that career break. What I would say is, in order to gain that confidence, to own the fact that you've been off for 10 years, is really looking at the value that you still believe that you can bring a business and the added value. So not just the value that you were bringing 10 years ago to a business, but the value that you can now bring. Because, you know, being a mum is very hard work.
Yeah.
We, you know, I think most of us agree that it's sometimes easier to go to work than be mum. So it is really hard work. So it's just reminding, you know, the person you're speaking to of the value that you can now bring and the qualities that you've gained by, you know, by having that career break.
Yeah, exactly. Can you manifest your career? This word manifest is, you know, thrown around a lot, you know, in the last couple of years, hasn't it? What are your thoughts?
I am very open to all different versions of manifestation. And I appreciate that there are so many different ways of looking at it. You might look at it from a spiritual side. So there's a lot of, you know, visualizing going on, and you might visualize through meditation. You might... yeah, just lean upon the more spiritual side of manifestation. Whether or not you do or you don't, one thing that I would say that I think is very powerful, and actually Dr. Tara Swart, who is a neuroscientist, fantastic, fantastic lady, she mentions this as well. And as soon as I sort of read this, I just thought, absolutely, because if you, the whole premise is that with manifestation, the idea is to get quite specific in what you're trying to manifest. So what is it that you want? Okay. Now, part of that process, for example, say you wanted a new job. Part of that manifestation, part of that process is thinking, right, what is it that I want to be doing? Why do I want it? And those that believe in the more spiritual side of manifestation, a lot of it will be about feeling it. You know, really kind of what would I be feeling if I was doing that role? If we remove that element and you're just purely looking at, okay, well, how can I make this happen? by getting quite specific with what you want and quite clear about what you want will make it a lot easier for you to be telling people mm-hmm. what it is you want to do. Mm-hmm. The more people that know what you want to do, the more open you are about what you want to do, not only will those opportunities are more likely to come to you because people know that's what you're looking for, but also you see them more.
Yeah.
Because you've got very specific, and it could be certain words that you've used that come up in a job description, for example. So you might be on LinkedIn and jobs might come up and you've decided that you want to be working in a certain area, and that area pops up, a departmental area, for example, rather than location. You're going to see that more because you've already thought about it. So it's just, for me, it's a lot about awareness, raising awareness. You know, if I see somebody put up something on social media, I'm now available for work in, the music industry. Well, part of my background is the music industry. So I will then be thinking, they're looking for a certain job in the music industry. I know somebody who knows somebody that might be able to help them. Mm. It's because they put it out there.
Yeah.
So whether or not you're putting it out there from a spiritual side and, giving it to the universe to deliver to you, or whether or not you're putting it out there to your friends, your network, your family, those people, your connections, it's going to come back to you in a similar way.
Yeah.
It's just raising awareness.
Yeah. That's so true. You're almost like creating the opportunities without realizing it.
Yeah.
Just by being honest.
Yeah.
With what you want.
Exactly.
There's another question. There's been quite a few questions around this topic. So I'm new into a large, well-known corporate. How do I stop imposter syndrome creeping in and feel confident, challenging, strong characters where appropriate? There's lots basically how to overcome imposter syndrome, all of those sorts of things.
Yeah. If we start with imposter syndrome and then think about, how then to kind of be able to speak, challenge those characters. With imposter syndrome, I take a slightly different view on imposter. I find that it works with my clients, so I stick to it. Sometimes we're told that with our imposter, we need to kind of kick it under the carpet, tell it where to go, and that, it doesn't serve us. We don't need it. It's just negative chatter. I find, actually, if you do the exact opposite and you befriend your imposter and actually have a think about, okay, what's that negative chatter telling me? And is there any truth in it? Can I actually support it with any experiences, knowledge, facts as to is there actual truth in what this kind of negative chatter is telling me? You might find absolutely no, there's none. And that might be enough for you to be able to say, actually, that point doesn't serve me, but I've looked into it. I don't need to think about it anymore. If there's truth in it, then you can start thinking about, okay, well, where am I getting that truth from? Okay, how is this helping me? So the reason why I say befriend your imposter is because actually your imposter can help you. Because it might be that it's telling you that actually, you can't possibly have a conversation with those challenging, personalities at work. You're not strong enough to do that. Okay, well, help me then. What do I need? What helpful information can my imposter be telling me in order to go and face those people, or in order to, start a different job? It might be that that imposter is telling you, actually, you need to study a bit more, or you need to work on X, Y, and Z. But look at the negative chatter as helpful information. Take the helpful information that is helpful.
Yeah.
And then put anything else away. Anything that you think, actually, I can't get anything from that. I'm just going to move that to one side. That's fine. But at least look at how helpful that information is and then take it and look, okay, what can I do with it? How can I move from a sort of a fixed mindset into a much more of a growth mindset?
Yeah.
So definitely worth befriending that imposter. In terms of, speaking to kind of challenging people at work, I would recommend that you step into their shoes and really understand how they need to receive information from you. So say you're challenging them. How do you think you should challenge them? So if you can, and it's not urgent, look at how they respond to others. Look at how other people give them feedback and how well they react to it. So, for example, if you're challenging somebody, some people can come across as quite defensive, and that can trigger somebody. That's not going to go anywhere. You know, that's not going to be a great conversation. But if you really understand how the other person ticks, you could challenge them in a way where they're receiving it to be, oh, this is interesting. I like this. This is a good brainstorm here. I'm getting information from this person. They're not necessarily agreeing with me, but this is what I need. But it's understanding what makes that person tick. Now, if you're in a new company, then that does take time, but it's time worth, you know, using, learning about those people, so that when you do start challenging them and you've got the confidence to speak up, you're challenging them in a way that they're going to receive it really well and not be triggered and then get angry with you, for example.
Yeah. Also, just back on the imposter syndrome thing, I think sometimes as well, like if you're starting in a new company or you're starting a new job or whatever it is, if you're just open with how you're feeling, like it's so good. Like, you know, for instance, when we did the live podcast, I was really nervous. I've never done anything like that before. So I just said it. Mm. I just said, oh no, do you know what? I'm really nervous. And then people sort of not end up reassuring you, but then it almost goes away because, you know, everyone knows how you're feeling. So then like you're less worried about it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is my first time here. Or, oh, this, you know, I've never done this before, but I've done this, this and this. So I think it's going to be okay.
Yeah. When you're faced with a new situation, I think you're right. I think, you know, being honest, everybody appreciates honesty, because at some point they would have been in that exact same position. So they will feel for you.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is just letting people know that you're, you know, say some people don't want to speak up and ask a question because they think they should know the answer. And again, when you start somewhere new, how do you know the answer?
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes it's just about saying, you know, if somebody asks you something and you don't know the answer, it's absolutely fine to say, okay, I don't know the answer to that, but let me go away and find that out and then get back to you. Because that's what the person just wants you to get back to them. They just want the answer. But it's being honest that I don't know the answer. And again, owning that I don't know the answer, but I will go away and, you know, get back to you with what that is.
Oh, how to confidently ask for a pay rise. Mm. I've just found out I'm doing the same work for less.
Okay, so there are some businesses that are very transparent with their pay. If you work somewhere that is, and that it's okay for you to know that your colleague is earning more than you and yet you're doing the same thing, then it would be perfectly acceptable to be able to sit down and say, you know, I've just found out recently that so-and-so is on X amount and yet I believe we are doing the same work. I just want to understand why this is the case. Again, you're not being defensive. You're making an inquiry. You're being curious, but you're allowing the business to explain. There may be a reason behind that they have, that they think this is the reason why. But at least you're giving them the chance to explain, rather than say, if you were to go into the meeting and say, hang on a minute, you know, this seems a bit unfair, because it starts the meeting off in the wrong way. You are going to trigger that person because they automatically feel that they have to fend themselves. So if you are able to do that, then, and it is very transparent, then that's absolutely acceptable way to do it. If it's not transparent and you're not meant to know, then the conversation needs to be slightly different. In a way that I would focus on the value that you bring. And also, if you're proposing something, don't necessarily go with, this is what I want, full stop. It needs to be backed up with, because I add value by, I do, you know, it's almost like, you know, when people go into a meeting with an issue, but they don't come up with a solution.
Yeah.
So think of it in that, you know, in that way. You've got this issue that is bugging you, you know, okay, what's the solution? Well, the solution in your mind is, give me a pay rise. But that's not going to be enough for the person that you want to give you that pay rise. So it's not necessarily anymore about the other person. It's actually about, okay, well, if I'm asking for this, I need to be able to say, this is why, and this is the value. And if you focus on the value that you bring and the experience and the knowledge, you're more likely to get a pay rise.
Love it. I'm starting a new job after mat leave. How can I set myself up for success?
It's absolute onboarding. It's looking at, you know, all the areas. What do you need to know about the business? And one thing I would say, actually, is that try inquire within the business if there is, and this is something if you feel comfortable doing this, but I find that clients who then get to know somebody who has also been on mat leave, just either some businesses have that set up, they do have set up like a mentoring scheme where somebody's, you know, coming back, but they do tend to be the businesses that have a very large maternity return sort of program. Yeah. But if there isn't one, definitely once you have started, try and, you know, sort of meet with somebody who's in a really similar position to you and find out how the company has managed that return and anything that they would advise you to do, not to do.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately it's really a case of thinking at it, okay, you've had the mat leave, but how would you normally, if you hadn't had the mat leave, how would you be going into that new job? So think about the people, the culture, your key stakeholders. So who are the people that you're going to be reporting into, working with? And all of this, I think what often happens is we start a new job, we want to hit the ground running. We feel like we need to start doing lots
yeah,
and lots of
doing. Yeah, proving ourselves straight away.
Yeah. And showing that you can do. The best advice I would give is that don't hit the ground running. Take some time to actually look at the business, look at the people, assess your role, get and take that time. Ask as many questions as you need to answer. Meet with as many people as you need to meet, and then start the doing. Because it's all of that, you know, it's often the first 90 days. You know, there's a lot of talk about the first 90 days. So, you know, how do you spend that time? There's a really great book. I think it's by Michael Watkins, The First 90 Days. And that's super helpful with those kind of first, you know, first few days.
Wow.
Because we're talking about, you know, returning from mat leave, there is that element of how we're feeling by having that mat leave. And as you said earlier, sometimes our confidence drops. We feel a bit strange going back into the workplace. So again, just sort of sit and remind yourself that you did do it before.
Yeah.
And that what did you do before? And how did you feel? And what was your routine? What was your structure? And sort of feel yourself into it again. Spend quite a bit of time thinking about it. And also little things like, is there anything that you did before that would get you into your, you know, your work identity? So is it that, you know, a certain point you'd make a cup of tea, say if you are going into the office, it might be that you've got a certain style that you wear when you're going into the office compared to obviously when you're in mat leave. So there might just be little things that get you into that work mode. Try and familiarise yourself with what they were. So as you're going back, you're already slipping into what feels normal for you.
Yeah, totally. Also, I think as well, this is advice I always give to friends, if you can, start the childcare a few weeks before you start your job. Like, I think that it is invaluable because obviously you get a little bit of a break anyway for you before, but also you get over all of those hurdles, those like the first drop, they might cry, you might cry, or it might not go to plan, or any of the, all of those little things that can come up and send you into a bad mood or, you know, put you on the back burner before you've even started your day. They're all ironed out.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you feel, I think that's, I would personally, that's what I always tell my mates to do.
Yeah, I always remember actually dropping my daughter off. I just had it in my head that she'd be absolutely fine.
Mm.
And, it was just awful. She cried for goodness knows how many sessions. And I remember one of the mornings they had this parents' room where you could sit and watch a TV screen. So you could see if they've stopped crying and if they're okay. I sat there for goodness knows how long. I think the lady came and asked me to leave in the end because I sat there for so long. I could never have done that, which probably may have been a good thing if I'd had to get a train into work.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
As you say, it's not just about the child getting used to it. It's about you getting used to it.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's great advice.
Exactly. And also even just things like you're not realising that there's traffic near the nursery and then you're suddenly like, oh gosh, I didn't realise this was going to take me an extra 10 minutes. Or if you've got to park at the station, you know, just all of those little things, they're just done. And then they're not going to be an issue and you can just focus on what you've got to do.
Yeah. I think the other thing about just being on the mat leave before returning to work, which is really important to note, is that don't necessarily have too many expectations of what might be, because I work with some women that have just gone on mat leave or they're preparing to go on mat leave. And they might say, oh yeah, I think I'm going to have 6 months off. And they're quite definite about that. And then I work with them again, you know, baby's sort of 5 months old and they think, actually, no, I'm not going to take 6 months. I'm going to take 8 months. Or, you know, we just don't know how we're going to feel. You know, I was a lot more relaxed with my son, but then he was my second child and I'd done it once before. I knew kind of what was to come. So it's managing those expectations, really.
Definitely. Do you know what, Emma? I think we'll finish up there because I think we've covered so much. Thank you. And where can we find you for anyone who might want to get some more advice or book in a session with you?
Great. You can find me on LinkedIn, just Emma Kangas, or my website is EK, as in Emma Kangas, ekcoaching.co.uk. Or on Instagram as well. Just drop me a note, and we can have a chat. But this has been an absolute joy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.